All right. Well, Colin Campbell, editor of the Insider State Government News Service. I think that's owned by the News and Observer of Raleigh. That's your former employer. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So lawmakers are heading back to Raleigh. Now, the most high-profile item on the agenda has to be judicial redistricting. And if you could just briefly explain what those changes would do, if you can.
Yeah, so this is something, a proposal that first surfaced back in June. It's been going through a legislative committee in the House side, led by Republican Representative Justin Burr from down in Stanley County. He wants to essentially overhaul the way Superior Court, District Court, and prosecutorial districts across the state are drawn. And the key point of that is that a lot of urban areas are getting carved up, so counties that normally were, you know, one or two districts are now going to be multiple districts. For example, for Buncombe County, that's currently one judicial district. It would be drawn into two. One would be Asheville City and points to the east, and the rest would be the rest of the county that's more rural. So, of course, the idea there is you would elect a Democrat from the Asheville seat and perhaps a Republican from the rural Buncombe County seat, as opposed to perhaps two Democrats that both hail from the city in a single county district. So that's prompting a lot of concerns from Democrats as well as people in the judicial community that this is going to result in a lot of incumbents losing their seats. It's apparently designed to help more Republicans get elected. So that's something that's going to be coming up in the House. And the big question is just whether the Senate is going to go along with it. It probably has the support to get a vote in the House this week, but the Senate hasn't said whether they're going to take up the issue as well.
And I've heard maybe from your reporting that the Senate may be a little cooler to the idea. Is that right?
Yeah, so the Senate leader, Phil Berger's chief of staff, has been going around meeting with judges privately to discuss an idea that the chief justice of the NC Supreme Court has also been pushing to actually just eliminate judicial elections entirely and instead create some sort of appointment process that doesn't put the judges before voters every couple of years. So that's something that may be an idea in the works as well, perhaps an alternative to redrawing the districts from an election standpoint. So that's something we could be hearing more about in the coming weeks.
Yeah, and that could be a constitutional referendum, I think, right?
Yeah, so that's not something the legislature could do on their own because it would involve changing the state's constitution. So that would have to go before voters. If they did it, it would probably be sometime in 2018, syncing up with some of the elections already scheduled for that year.
Okay, and you've noted in your most recent column that another reason that they're coming back is to deal with some governor vetoes. Roy Cooper has a couple of vetoes out there. What are you looking for with those vetoes?
Yeah, so I guess the big one is the most recent veto from the governor, and that's the bill that I guess its marquee provisions are the repeal of the plastic shopping bag ban that's currently in place in some Outer Banks counties. He was opposed to that. This also involves some funding to address the Gen X river contamination down on the eastern side of the state. That was something the governor felt like was inadequate to address that issue. He wanted more funding for his environmental regulatory agency that's seen a lot of budget cuts recently. So that's sort of the tension there. It does appear that the legislature has the votes to override that veto. So we'll see that happen. There's also a couple other environmental bills that are floating out there. We'll see if any of them get taken up this week or get held off for a future session.
The garbage juice bill, and maybe you can explain what garbage juice is, but that veto actually has a chance of being sustained?
Yeah, so the governor vetoed this bill back in the summer, and this is the bill that garbage juice is the term everyone uses, but it's basically the nasty runoff liquid that comes from landfills. There was a proposal to turn that into sort of a almost like aerosol-like spray to dispose of it that way as opposed to any other sort of disposal mechanisms for this gross liquid, and the governor vetoed that. They've since had it on the calendar multiple times in August and opted not to take the vote. That typically means it's a sign that particularly the House doesn't have the votes it needs among the Republican Party to get that three-fifths majority necessary to override a veto. And I've noticed that the bill is not on the agenda for the overrides this week. So it's entirely possible that that could just sit out there and never become law.
Okay. And now you had noted in your column also about this legal notices bill, and you had talked about how Governor Cooper may have had some success with that veto. They didn't override it, but maybe it's going to be back before lawmakers.
Yeah, this is one of those things where, you know, if you're the majority party, you can find a workaround to a lot of the process difficulties that you get in making laws. So this was the bill that would change the legal notice requirements for local government. So currently, if your city council is having a public hearing on something, they're required to put a notice in the classified ad section of the local newspaper. What several legislators and a number of local government groups want to do is instead have those notices be put on local government websites where you'd have to kind of go out of your way to go find them. It would also result in less revenue going to some of the newspapers. So they've been very active in pushing against this bill, managed to get it turned into just a local bill involving Guilford County and Greensboro, but then the governor still vetoed that, and they apparently don't have the votes they need to override that veto. So instead they're bringing it back as a local bill that only impacts Guilford County and has no other statewide provisions attached, and that's going to mean that if they can pass it, the governor doesn't get an opportunity to veto it, and it'll become law just for Guilford County and probably have a pretty negative impact on the newspapers there and change how the public gets notified about important government actions.
Representative Chuck McGrady, who's a lawmaker out here in Western North Carolina out of Hendersonville, he's in favor of that, but he may have been just the one who said it could be coming back. This is a Trudy Wade sponsor bill, is that right?
Yeah, Trudy Wade, who is from Greensboro and is sort of believed to have some negative relationships with the Greensboro newspaper over their coverage, is pushing this for Greensboro. McGrady was a sponsor earlier this year of a bill in the House that did essentially the same thing on a statewide basis. So he's supportive of the change, but isn't as active now that it's just Guilford County, which is well outside of his district. He was getting a fair amount of pushback from newspaper publishers actually in his own district who were not happy with him for supporting this legislation.
Okay, and switching gears just a bit, you know, in the wake of those shootings out of Las Vegas, the Washington Post has been looking at donations to members of Congress from the National Rifle Association, and they put out a graphic today. I know you've had a look at those numbers, and it's one of our lawmakers out west who's at the very top of that list. Is that right?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised by this because you would kind of assume NRA donations would sort of correlate with the most powerful lawmakers in Washington, and that would be senators. And Senator Richard Burr is number one among North Carolina's delegation with about $40,000 in NRA contributions. But number two, just behind him, is Representative Patrick McHenry, who had $31,300 in NRA contributions in the recent period. So he's topping even Tom Tillis, the other senator from North Carolina, and every other member of the Republican congressional delegation from the states.
Including Mark Meadows, who had just over $3,000. He's our other Western North Carolina congressman. Do you think it's maybe because Patrick McHenry would be sort of aligned with the more establishment type Republicans and he was acting whip just until recently when Steve Scalise came back?
Yeah, I think certainly his prominence in a sort of traditional leadership position makes him more attractive to the NRA because I think they can probably feel like he's going to be more aligned with their agenda, whereas a Mark Meadows, because he's part of the House Freedom Caucus, is perhaps a little bit more of a wild card in what agenda items he's going to support for an organization like the NRA.
May even be just considered a safer vote, perhaps. I'm not sure.
Yeah, absolutely. That could definitely be true because I know some of the other folks sort of in Mark Meadows' camp are down at the bottom of the list, like Mark Walker and Ted Budd. Ted Budd, oddly, who's a gun range owner, a member of Congress from in the Winston-Salem area, is actually getting less than even Mark Meadows is from the NRA.
Yeah, I guess they figure they've got him in the bag then with, you know, as far as votes go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, all right, Colin Campbell, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.